Bhagavatam discussion will be from chapter 6, canto 2. And if you don't mind, I'm just going to continue where I left off. A little bit of kind of review, but I'm trying to cover the second canto in sequence. So we'll be reading from texts 40-41. They're combined together. Just a little, really quick background. Text, chapter 6 is Purusha Sukta confirmed. Purusha Sukta are prayers from the Rig Veda. And they're describing the process of creation from the Lord in the spiritual world, to his expansion as the Purusha avatars, and then the subsequent, what the Purusha avatars do, and then what Lord Brahma does, and then the details of the species, and the four varnas, and the whole material creation is laid out in the Purusha Sukta prayers. Then, what the Bhagavatam is doing is, in essence, giving a commentary, taking the same sequential steps as the Purusha Sukta prayers are describing, and then expanding the meaning, explaining them. So you can say it's a natural commentary, just like Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. This chapter is a natural commentary on Rig Veda, Purusha Sukta Mantras. The storyline, because it's Purana, it's Brahma answering Narada's questions. Narada asks all kinds of questions. What's going on? Are you the Supreme? Are you not the Supreme? And so on. And detailed questions. So Brahma answers Narada. So he's answered Narada. And now, this is the closing chapter, the closing verses of the chapter, and it's so, he basically, in very capsule form, reviewed what he said, and now it's closure to the chapter. The verse just preceding, Text 39, Brahma says to Narada, the Supreme Original Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, expanding his plenary portion as Mahavishnu, the first incarnation, creates this manifested cosmos, but he is unborn. So all things born come from him, but he is unborn. The creation, however, takes place in him, although he's unborn. The creation takes place in him, and the material substance and manifestations are all himself. This is, so it goes into the Achintya Veda Veda Tattva. The energies are him, but he is different. So that's the subject, very wonderfully explained by Prabhupada. He maintains them for some time and absorbs them into himself again. So this is Vyasadeva's teaching of the transformations of energies, the essential teaching of the Bhagavatam, or the essential teaching of Vaishnavism. Vyasa's teaching is Shakti Parinamavad, and so now we're going to hear in the next verse the Shankara's teaching, directly spoken in the verse and dismissed in the purport, that is called Vivartavad. Vivarta means covering, and Vada means doctrine. So the doctrine that Brahman becomes covered. We'll He, Brahma says this is asat tarkais, false logic. The verse is focusing on Krishna in the spiritual world, because Purusha Stokta is describing the expansions of the Purusha avatars that make the material world. And what's the relationship between the Supreme Lord, the Purusha, and material creation? Because it's quite mysterious and quite difficult to understand how something material comes from something that's all spiritual. It's a baffling subject matter for most theologies, and they either don't address it at all or they really do a bad job explaining the relationship. This is sambandh again, it's really fundamental. The relationship between all things and their source of emanation. But when you propose that the source of emanation is all spiritual, how do you get material things? And it's ethical issues like suffering. You know, the common question people ask, if God is all good, why is there suffering in this world? If he's all powerful, if he can do whatever he wants, why does he make a place where people suffer? They can't figure it out. And so they have different ways of addressing what they can't figure out, and it's not correct, whatever it is. So, this verse specifically is speaking of Krishna and spirit. So what to speak of, like the Dr. Frog, how something about this material creation, something about the cause of the material creation, what to speak of what's beyond the material creation. So that's what this verse is about. Brahma is saying to Narada, this is the Lord who is beyond the material creation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, text 40, is pure, Vishuddham, being freed from all contaminations of material tinges. Kevalam, Vishuddham Kevalam. He is the absolute truth, Jnanam, and the embodiment of full and perfect knowledge. He is all-pervading, Pratyak, without beginning or end, Avastitam, and without rival, Satyam Purnam, Anadi Anantam, Nirguna Nityam Advayam. O Narada, O great sage, the great thinkers can know him, gives two conditions, when completely freed from all material hankerings, small thing, and when sheltered under undisturbed conditions of the senses. Otherwise, by untenable arguments, asat tarkais, all is distorted, and the Lord disappears from our sight. He doesn't go out of existence, but such persons cannot see him, and their philosophy further covers him. So it's a long purport, and I don't know how far we're going to get. See? Report. Here is an estimation of the Lord apart from his transcendental activities in the temporary material creations. Okay, so Purusha, when you hear the word Purusha avatars or Purusha Sukta, it's dealing with material creation. And that's fascinating. Besides it's fascinating, it helps reduce the baffling effect of what the creation does to most people. Like, bewilders them. It helps unbewilder our bewildered state. But it also gives a great impetus or inspiration to take shelter of the Lord who is beyond the material creation. Direct glorification of the Lord does that. Otherwise, so many religious processes are how to get something that you want out of being a pious person and get something within material creation. Not so much take shelter of, render service unto, fix your mind upon that Supreme Lord, and by so doing, transcending material desire. It's much more how to fulfill material desire. So the Bhagavatam wants to take us to that position of transcendence. So that's this Purusha Sukta being explained. Although there's so much technical stuff, I guess technical people like technical stuff. But it's not just, so now you have a whole lot of information of how technical things happen. It's interesting. But beyond interesting, it has this transcendental feature. So now, Prabhupada has explained, Brahma is going to take us beyond that into another realm. And he chooses to start by smashing the misconception, the Mayavad conception. Mayavad philosophy tries to designate the Lord as contaminated by a material body. Plug your ears when you hear such offensive things, because it's offensive, it's not only wrong. And then he goes on to explain their contaminated idea. That is, when he accepts forms of incarnation, this sort of interpolation, you know that from mathematics, interpolation. So, asat tarkais is another. Is completely denied herein by the explanation of the Lord's, that the Lord's position is pure and unalloyed in all circumstances. According to Mayavad philosophy, the spirit soul, when covered by nescience, is designated as jiva. But when freed from such ignorance or nescience, emerges into the impersonal existence of the absolute truth. So let's go over that. Their idea is, once upon a time, all that exists is Brahman. And Brahman exists, like, you know, if you think the fall of the jiva is a tough question to understand, listen to this one. Once upon a time, all there is Brahman. And for no reason whatsoever, something that doesn't even exist, called Maya, because Maya doesn't exist. Brahman Satya and Jagat Mithya, to something that doesn't exist, covers Brahman. And when you find the term jiva in the Vedic literatures, what is jiva? It's covered Brahman. What is Brahman covered with? Something that doesn't exist. How does it happen? It doesn't happen because it doesn't even exist, but it gets covered, and so is jiva. And Krishna is just like, you know, the quantum of Brahman covered by a very subtle form of goodness, and that's called an incarnation. Wow! That's an avatar. Brahman covered by subtle goodness appears. Voila! And so what is Krishna? What is Rama? What is Nisringa? What are the avatar forms of the Lord? Same. Because there is no distinction between jiva and Bhagavan. Ha! There's only one thing. Brahman. So the avatars are coverings of Brahman. Subtle coverings. You know, way up there. coverings. And then that which never doesn't even exist, which covers Brahman, which is the only thing that exists, somehow gets uncovered. And then it's just Brahman again. That's Vivartavad. And all of the Vedas, according to Shankara, are to teach Vivartavad. It's just Brahman is all that exists. And there are different states of things that don't really exist, and we give them different names. And so, you're Narayan, and I'm Narayan. And poor Narayan. Narayan just got covered by something that doesn't exist. Illusion. That means illusion's greater. So the argument to a Mayavadi is, okay, so what you're saying is, in effect, Maya is greater than Brahman. And the reply is, no, no, no. Maya doesn't exist. That which doesn't exist covers Brahman, which is the only thing that exists. So how did it happen that which doesn't exist covers the only thing that exists? Do you think the fall of the jiva is tough? Now, Prabhupada addresses that. So, that's what he calls, in different names, asat tarkais, or interpolation, or what's the other? Untenable arguments. So if one does not have these two qualifications that Brahma mentions in the purport, or in the verse, that is, being completely freed from material hankerings, I guess that disqualifies us, and when is shelter under undisturbed condition of the senses, might disqualify us, then we can't really understand Krishna. So to understand Krishna, you know, the janma karma chame divyam, it doesn't mean just like theoretical. Like theoretically we understand that we're a spirit soul, not this body. And then we busy ourselves chasing around after the enjoyments of the body. Same with Krishna. It's not, okay, Krishna's unborn and then he's born. And we celebrate Janmashtami every year, and you know we're going back to Godhead because we celebrate Krishna Janmashtami. It's good, but it's not, you know, chaktva deham purnar janma sufficient. So therefore, the Bhagavatam is illuminating, not just elucidating, but bringing light to Krishna's transcendental position. There's a Sanatan Goswami is the author of Hari Bhakti Vilas, and in Hari Bhakti Vilas, Sanatan Goswami presents basically it's a how-to manual, how to live life, how to perform things that Vaishnavas do, and how to do them in a proper way. Rituals, worship, deity, initiation, spiritual master, chanting, yajnas, grihastha life, how-to manual. Details, 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 details. Scriptural references. So, in one section, he discusses how to chant effectively. Hey, that's a good section, right? For those of us that are trying to chant effectively. Sanatan Goswami is giving us tips. And there's six items he mentions. One of those six items is to when chanting, to contemplate or to carry consideration of the transcendental nature of that chant, minimally, and when we're chanting the Maha Mantra, that Krishna's name is fully transcendental. So, not of this world. It's not a material sound vibration. It's not a karmakanda ritual that gets us, you know, perks so we can enjoy in this life and the next life. It's full, it's direct contact with Krishna. Abhinatvam nama namino. Krishna and his name are none different. Minimally that, when chanting. But then, what Brahma is doing here with Narada gives us so much more of an understanding of Krishna in the spiritual world, how he is, in the Purusha Sukta prayers, the creator of this place where we are, the mind with which we're meditating, the senses with which we're chanting and worshipping, how those instruments are extensions of him, but for the purpose of fixing our mind upon him, who's beyond those things. That's transcendental. And it's very potent. So the message of the Bhagavatam, it's nice, I like Bhagavatam, and it's a nice verse. So Prabhupada writes, this is his speciality. What is that speciality? Perpetual freedom from all material contaminations. Now, that distinguishes the living entity. This is Vyasadeva's teaching, distinct from Shankara's teaching. Now we'll go over a different view of the jiva and the Supreme, Bhagavan. Qualitatively one, quantitatively different, essentially. In that qualitative difference, there's a speciality of Bhagavan. And there's a number of specialities of Bhagavan. These adjectives that are in the verse describe them. This distinguishes the Lord from the individual common living entities who have the aptitude for being subordinated by nescience and thus becoming materially designated. Upadi, right? Sarvupadi vinir muktam tat partvena nirmalam. Rishikena Rishikesham Sevanam Bhaktir Uttama. So Bhaktir Uchite. The living entity is marginal potency. Marginal potency means, so this is the fall of the jiva topic. The fall of the jiva is simply because the living entity has this aptitude. That is, there is propensity innate within the living entity to be covered, distinct from the Supreme Lord, who has no such propensity. Covered by what? So this is going to go back to the Mayavad idea. Covered by what? Not covered by something that doesn't exist. To be covered by a potency of the Lord, the avidya potency of the Lord. The avidya potency of the Lord covers the living entity, and the living entity is an entity that has qualities like the Lord, but has this aptitude because of his marginal position. He has an aptitude to become covered. So, or to be in the spiritual energy, or in the material energy, and influenced by one or the other. The aptitude is there in both directions. And that's the distinction between jiva, who is very tiny, Anu, and the Supreme Lord, who doesn't have such aptitude, and who is Vibhu, who never becomes covered. Although after liberation, the living entity can become one with the same quality of existence as the Lord, his very tendency to become contaminated, which the Lord never has, makes the living entity different from the Lord. Repeating himself. In the Vedas it is said, Shuddham apapa vidham. Does anybody recognize that phrase? Ishopanishad. Shuddham apapa vidham. You haven't studied Ishopanishad? Okay. Well, Shuddham, you know the meaning, pure. Apapa vidham. Sinless by constitution. So Krishna has that quality. It's one of the prayers, one of the mantras of Ishopanishad, in which this Om Purnam Madak Purnam Idam, that the absolute is being described as Shuddham Apapa Vidham. Prabhupada uses this word Apapa Vidham, if my memory serves me right, as prophylactic, means when the Supreme comes in contact with something that's impure, like antiseptic, it makes that impure pure. Like the sun in contact with something impure, the sun doesn't become contaminated, but that which the sun comes in contact with, the impure something, becomes sun-like or purified. So the Lord is like that. The living entity doesn't have that quality. It's distinct. Although, qualitatively, one that we're indicating here, there are some, because of quantitative differences, there's some qualitative differences. The Lord is this Shuddham Apapa Vidham. The individual Atma becomes polluted by sin, but the Lord is never contaminated by sins. Metaphor of the sun. Sun makes things pure when in contact with impure. Similarly, the Lord is never contaminated by sins. On the contrary, the sinful living entity becomes sterilized by contact with the Lord. This means that the Lord is also all-pervading like the sun, and as such, the word pratyak is used in this verse. Pratyak is used by Prabhupada is explaining word for word by word the text. Vishuddham kevalam is how it starts. Gyanam pratyak. Pratyak in the word for word is all pervading. So how is it that Bhagavan, because that's what the verse is speaking about, beyond the material creation, the Lord in the spiritual realm, he's all pervading. Same as in the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna describes everything is within me. And he uses the phrase avyakta murti, right? It's mentioned in the previous verse. Mayatatamidam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina matstani sarvabhutani nachaham teshu avastitaha. So what's this avyakta murti? By me in my unmanifested form. By Krishna, and as it's explained in the purport, 9.4 Bhagavad Gita, his unmanifested form is his expansion of his energies. He's all-pervading, as the sun in this universe is all-pervading through the spreading of its rays. The sun is everywhere. It's not that literally the sun is everywhere. The sunlight is coming in the room, but it's not the sun is in the room. We'd have a, we'd be pretty hot if it was in flames. The sun was in the room. But the sun is in the room through its rays. That's the, so we don't see Krishna when, you know, we see the energies of Krishna. Unless you're a devotee. Now devotees see Krishna. But otherwise one sees the energies, and this is this avyakta. We don't see Krishna. Materialist. But they can see the energies, and so as far as they're concerned, that's all there is. And one of the core teachings, the core doctrines is Kanada, the atomic theory, just like modern science has that brilliant discovery. That's everything. There's atoms and the laws that govern atoms, and that's all there is. Ask him. Stephen Dawkins will tell everybody. That's all there is. There's physical laws, and there's atoms, and Gotama was right. There is no God. So it's not just something abstract and, you know, ancient stuff, and, you know, it's interesting, but it's not relevant today. It's relevant today. Big time atheistic demons are doing the best they can to lead the world into atheism. Someone told me Dawkins recently visited, he recently visited China and he was worshipped like, you know, guru. This is today. This is not just, you know, Brahma and Narada, but the dawn of creation. So the Avyaktamurti, the presence of the Lord everywhere. I am present everywhere through my expansion of his energy. So Brahma is explaining how this works. He's Pratyak. He's a personal pronoun. He's a person. And as the Supreme Person, like the sun is present everywhere through its rays, Krishna is present everywhere through the expansion of his energies, his Avyaktamurti, or one can say also his universal form. So we can see one part of the universe. You know, here's, you know, Seattle, Washington. But how are you going to see the whole of the universe in one place at one time? That's the universal form. And, you know, it's circuit overload. What, you know, how can you get such an experience? You know, your brain would short circuit. To experience, just try to think of, you know, how do you think of such a thing? How do you think of the desires of all living entities in Seattle? Just even that part of existence, all at once. All the desires of all living entities in Seattle. All the birds and all the insects and all the worms and all the trees and all the people and all at once. All the forms, all the homes. You know, the whole universe. That's the universal form. Krishna manifests this universe through that agency. It's one of his forms. And it's his energies. And so, when one sees those energies, one doesn't see him. If one approaches that experience by logic and reason, like he disappears, that's what Brahma is saying. But for the devotee, Brahma's training Narada in devotion, that means he's training us in devotion, how to see, when we see each thing, or the depiction of the universal form, the whole thing, any part or the whole, see it in relation to its source of emanation. And by so doing, one becomes sterilized, or, you know, the contaminations become removed. That's the exercise we're doing. The looking beyond the covering to see the essence of the Supreme in the spiritual world. Nothing is excluded from the existence of the Lord's potential expansions. Okay, that's one picture. Now he goes to the next thing, what seems to contradict it. The Lord is within everything, and he is all covering also. He's outside of everything. Okay, now I got a problem with that. How do you It's like, you know, we're in the room and we're outside the room. You can be in the room or you can be outside the room, but not. It's the inconceivable is the yogam aishvaryam, the inconceivable mystic potencies of the Supreme Lord. And then how do you, you cannot adjust it with a binary processor. Because it's either one or zero. It's not inside and simultaneously outside. So by mental speculation, it doesn't fit. The Lord will never be understood. This world will never be understood. Our experiences will never be understood. No matter how sophisticated the binary processor becomes, how brilliant the intellectual mental speculator becomes, he'll never understand. But here it's being laid out for us by devotee, Brahma, Narada, the disciplic succession. The Lord is within everything, and he is all covering also, without being disturbed by the activities of the individual souls. So he's the source of the jivas. He doesn't become implicated in the misuse of free will, that how the living entities then become covered, the actions of the covering. That's Vivarta. The living entities become covered, but not the Supreme Lord. Although those energies that are doing the covering are but his energies. That which comes, that all those things that are born, he remains unborn, unchanged. He's unchanging. Literally also, the soul is unchanging. We know that from second chapter Bhagavad Gita. But it sure looks like the living entity is undergoing changes. And, you know, it sure feels to us like we're undergoing changes. But that's because we're identifying with the covering. That we're thinking like that. So the transcendental life is, or the life of self-realization, is to see all that with detachment, dispassionate detachment. Not just like I don't care kind of detachment, but seeing it as the miraculous display of the Lord's energies. While we are unchanging as he is unchanging, the difference between us and him is we have a tendency to become covered and accept the designations of who we think we are. According to the coverings, gross and subtle. I'm this body and therefore I'm this person. I have this kind of mind, and therefore I'm that kind of person. I'm the kind of person who fill in the blank. It describes our subtle states. I become angry. I'm very forgiving, very compassionate, very you know, whatever it is, easily angered. I'm the kind of person who, you know, is an illusion. Accepting the covering, the designations that then cover the living entity into forgetfulness of who we really are. So, Brahma is at the end of the verse is saying, only those who have these two conditions, where they're minds are free from material hankerings completely, and senses are completely sheltered. That is, that shelter is service. So, gross and subtle coverings, senses and mind. Gross and subtle coverings are properly aligned towards the Supreme. Then one can understand these things, not beyond the, you know, the philosophical, intellectual kind of understanding. Be fixed in Krishna consciousness understanding. So these are glorifications, mahima, the glorifications of Krishna. And with the glorifications of Krishna, fortunately there's great spiritual potency, and by using Prabhupada's phrase, trying to understand Krishna, it's not that we can understand Krishna. We can understand that we can't understand Krishna by our binary processor. We can understand Krishna by receiving the potencies of his glories in this descending fashion. And then when we go to our chanting, following this exercise of taking our intelligence to the all-pure, supreme, worshipping Krishna with our intelligence in that way, purifying our intelligence, when we do our activities of this world and chant the holy name in our sadhana practices and, you know, try to live the life in devotion, our intelligence has become spiritualized by this shuddham apapa vidham contact with the Supreme. And it allows the potency of the holy name and our practices, our direct devotional practices, prayer, worship, hearing and chanting, remembering, serving the Vaishnavas, it makes our hearts softer so that the experience of Krishna becomes more a part of what we're doing every day in that purified state. In the Vedas, it is said that only the Lord alone exists and all other existences depend on Him. That's discussed in Bhagavad Gita in purports, and it's one of the nutshell verses of the Bhagavatam. Aham evasam evagre. Krishna says, Vishnu says to Brahma, before the beginning of creation, I alone exist. During the period of cosmic manifestation, I alone exist. After cosmic annihilation, guess what? I alone exist. So there's this unity, this integrity and non-difference position of all things with Krishna. Having said that, then there are differentiations. There's Krishna and Krishna's energies. So there's this oneness and difference. Without this philosophy of Lord Chaitanya, Chinchabeda Veda Tattva, it's really mind-boggling. Because there are statements that emphasize the oneness. There are statements that emphasize the difference. You know, a discerning individual looks at the one, looks at the other, and is scratching his head. Without understanding the relationship of God and His energies. And then what to speak of God beyond His energies? Then it just merges into this impersonal blur where, okay, all that exists is Brahman and then everything else doesn't exist. That's pretty dull. That's not satisfying. That's not what the Bhagavatam is teaching us. Yeah.
Like, soul, individual souls are supposed to be like eternal, right?
So not supposed to be.
They are eternal.
They are eternal.
So, before cosmic manifestation,
they exist.
They exist.
They exist. But, so when Krishna is saying, I alone exist, that's part, the living entities are part of Krishna. When Krishna says, I alone exist. The energies of creation, are in their unmanifest and their manifest, and again their unmanifest state, that's also, I alone exist. So in one sense, there's nothing but Krishna. Or, stated slightly differently, there's nothing but Krishna and Krishna's. Because Krishna's is also Krishna. So his, and there's not a third thing. Krishna and Krishna's expansions. Should we stop and discuss a bit, or should I keep going? In the Vedas it is said that only the Lord alone exists and all other existences depend on Him. He is the generating reservoir for everyone's existential capacity. Not even just like, you know, how fast you can run or how high you can jump, but your existential capacity. We would not exist except for the prior existence of Krishna. It's like the Brahmanohi Pratishtaham statement in the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. This Pratishta is an existential statement. Krishna is the basis or support or rest or Pratishta of Brahman. We can say the microphone stand is resting on the rug, and the rug is resting on the floor, and the floor is resting on some support beams, and support beams are resting on the earth, and one thing's resting upon another thing. And that's a physical support or basis. This is an existential. Brahman exists because Krishna exists. Living entities exist because Krishna exists. Now, we don't go the other direction. If Krishna went out of existence, living entities would go out of existence. But Krishna does exist. So, recently I was asked this question, why does Krishna exist? It's like, why is Krishna Buddha? That kind of a question. The way I answered the question was, if there was a reason for Krishna's existence, and that reason would be supreme, and Krishna would not be supreme. What's the cause of Krishna? For what reason? Because Krishna is the effect, and there's a cause. But Krishna is the cause of all causes. There's no cause for Krishna's existence. There's no reason. He just is. He eternally is. There was not a time when Krishna wasn't. And there was a reason, and then Krishna came into existence. And since Krishna is eternal, the living entities are also eternal. Because our existence is the expansion of Krishna's pleasure potency. He wants to enjoy, and that's not, you know, why. It's not like he's lacking something. That's just his nature. And we're to provide service to him to increase his happiness, which is unlimited. Now, the binary processor doesn't get that because, okay, this, what's the cause? Just is. And then the energy, the spiritual energy, the covering energy, and the marginal energy, they're eternally existing. Sometimes manifest, sometimes, so you get variegatedness, and that's also not a problem. If you understand the Supreme, who eternally exists, has variegatedness inherently within him. Because he's everything. And there isn't something outside of him. And then there's different ways of looking at it's just marveling at Krishna. It's not like, you know, technology. It's marveling at Krishna. How wonderful is Krishna? He does this way, and he does that way, and wow. There's nobody like him. There's not a second. There's like, you know, the devil, Satan, who's wearing dark trunks and weighing in at 250 pounds and has a heavy KO punch, and he's ready to undergo the heavyweight championship against Krishna. There isn't such an entity, a equal and opposite powerful force competing with God. Some theologies have that idea. There's God and there's Satan, and you just have to go to the God side and cheer for his team and boo every time you see Satan. It's not our theology. So, he's the generating reservoir for everyone's existential capacity. He is the supreme truth of all other categorical truths. He is the source of everyone's opulence, and therefore no one can equal him in opulence. Being full of all opulence, namely wealth, fame, beauty, etc., certainly he is the supreme person, and because he is a person, he has many personal qualities, although he is transcendental to the material modes. So this nirgunam. Oh, he's nirgunam. He has no qualities. He has no material qualities. Because he's a person, he has qualities. He has so much, including qualities, but he has no qualities that are material-like, that is, you know, limiting and dark, and that's not him. It's not qualities that are duality-like. Sometimes he's happy and sometimes he's sad, like we know happiness and sadness. He sometimes feels separation from Radha, and so he has a transcendental emotion of ecstasy. That is the emotion of separation. But there's no separation. It's an emotion. Transcendental emotion. Oh, come on. So, you can see that where subtle things about Krishna's transcendental nature are just not understood by the speculative method. Although the codes of the Vedas spell it out, they cannot enter into the mystery of loving exchange with Krishna because asat tarkais. It just doesn't, you know, if without logic and reason, forget it. We have already discussed the statement, itam bhuta guno harihi. Does that ring any bells? Itam bhuta guno harihi. It's from the Atmarama verse. Atmaramas cha munayo nirgranta api urukrame. What's the rest? The last line is itam bhuta guno harihi. Nirgranta api urukrame. Itam bhuta guno harihi is the last line of the Atmaram verse, where it says that the Lord has transcendentally attractive qualities that attract even the Atmaramas, like Shukadeva Goswami, who was Brahman realized from the time of birth, yet he took the time and trouble to study or learn Srimad Bhagavatam. So the sages say, wait. Why did he study some literature as if, you know, there's something lacking, and by studying this literature he would get that something that is lacking? Why would he learn something from his father? He was already a liberated soul. And that just shows that the Bhagavatam is fully transcendental, as the Lord is fully transcendental, because the Bhagavatam is describing his qualities. Those qualities of the Lord are so attractive that liberated souls are attracted, who aren't attracted to something material. Like the Kumaras, who are attracted to the Lord of Vaikuntha, although they're not materially attracted to anything. So therefore, it's the logic. It's logic. The logic is, his qualities are transcendental. They're not material. He's not within nirguna. He's not within the modes. His qualities are not within the modes. His form is not material. And when he does transcendental things, just hearing, like, you know, seeing the wonderful pictures of the Leela with Putana, how wonderful. Just because by meditating upon those pastimes of Krishna, that's it spiritualizes our consciousness. It's the shutam apapa vidham effect. We become sanitized, purified, uplifted, spiritualized, because they're not material qualities, not material activities. And it gives us protection. Just meditation on that pastime gives us protection from false teachings. The attraction for Krishna awakens naturally. Very sublime. Although possessed of all personal qualities, he is nonetheless omnipotent. Well, that's, why is that? They're not contradictory. One can be omnipotent and possessed of all qualities. But, you know, from the impersonalist point of view, aha! As soon as you have potencies, then you have diversity. As soon as you have diversities, you don't have Brahman. You have plurality instead of one. Material. False. No potencies. Just see what they're doing. They're neutering God, who is all potent. Just by their philosophical word juggling. Well, it doesn't work. Excuse me, Mr. Impersonalist, but it doesn't work. You're dismissing the personality of God and the potencies of God by your word jugglery. You know, you're going to get your toothache too. You're going to die too. And, you know, those potencies will, material and spiritual potencies will manifest themselves. Even you just philosophically dismissed God. By saying he cannot have potencies. You go the other direction. Jiva Goswami. Very simple statement. Brilliant. He says that in order to understand God, one must fundamentally accept he has unlimited, inconceivable potencies. Go the other direction, and then there's something he cannot have. So you've just reduced the unlimited. So you go that, he must have unlimited, inconceivable potencies. And as soon as you've accepted that, anything can happen. He can extend material creations and have it work fully under his supervision and not be entangled in it at all. He has inconceivable potencies. And therefore the Yoga Maitrayam, the chapter 9 Bhagavad Gita description, by his inconceivable potencies, this mysterious thing, what to speak of the spiritual realm, which this verse is even just speaking about, even the material realm, things that are just mysterious. That the most brilliant scientists speculate their brains out and still can't bring something that's conclusive. He still is far beyond. Just as the Brahma Samhita verse says, through the mind speed and wind speed, trying to approach the Supreme, build a vimana that travels that fast, zoom, fast as the mind goes for millions and millions and millions, millions of years, and the Lord is still far beyond. Because he's not approachable by that instrument. He's more subtle. No matter how far you go with how capable the mind is, mental gymnastics or mental speculation cannot approach the Supreme. Not possible. But he's easily Vedeshu Durlabham Adurlabham Atma Bhakto by devotion. So that's the approach that the Bhagavatam is taking us into, the devotion approach. So when we hear the glories of the Supreme Lord, how is a devotee to take, oh, my Lord, what wonderful, inconceivable potencies. Just see how wonderful he is. Like the cowherd boys, when they would go back home at the end of the day, they would say to their families, wow, what did Krishna do today? Let me tell you, he's so wonderful. not trying to figure it out. How did he do it? Did he really do it? Maybe it was a trick or something. Maybe it didn't happen. Maybe it was just an illusion. How wonderful is Krishna? How wonderful is Krishna? That's how devotees. No, that's, you know, okay. For the empiricist, that's simple-minded. What happened to your discerning abilities, my dear sober intellectual? But the sober intellectual understands the Lord has inconceivable potencies. How wonderful they are. Then they're inconceivable. The mind, he can disclose them if he likes, but you can't penetrate them by your stomping your little foot and saying, I want you to show me, otherwise I'm not going to believe you. Doesn't work that way. It's revealed by the descending mercy process, and the descending mercy readily enters into the heart of one whose heart is soft. And the intelligence can help the heart become soft instead of helping the heart become hard by recognizing the inconceivable potencies of the Absolute through the assistance of great acharyas. So, we're halfway through the purport. And I'm going to have to, at 8:15, the phone's going to ring. I'm going to have to take care of some stuff. Go to forum18.org and you can read about the Kazakhstan mess. I'll send a little note out. While we were sleeping, the bulldozers in Kazakhstan were knocking over homes in our ISKCON temple. So, I'm going to have to deal with it. The president of Kazakhstan is in the UK meeting today or tomorrow with Tony Blair. So our devotees who have connections with the British government are going to make sure Tony Blair talks to the president of Kazakhstan. Hey, what's going on in your country? And so on. You can read about it. Any discussion on the Bhagavatam? A few minutes before the phone rings. Yeah. How does the wish? Free will of the living entity? Well, it's you go back and back and back and back and back and back into, you know, the primordial free will choice. Choose the internal energy or the external energy. Once you choose the external energy, there are far more restricted free will choices that we make. You know, will I get up when the alarm rings, or will I just lie in bed? You know, we make some free will choices. Will I eat this or that today? We make some free will choices. But there's this primordial free will choice that I choose to be covered by illusion, to try to enjoy dependently from the Supreme. So those are reflections of the real free will choice that we made. Because, you know, we think of free will choices of, you know, I can live here or live there. I'll drive at this speed or that speed. I'll work at this place or that place. I'll buy this home or that home. We're making free will choices. But it's all in the realm of illusion, of that which is temporary. And so, it can get darker, it can get lighter, but it's still covered And then the free will choice of acting in relation to the internal potency. There's varieties of choices. There also, how will I serve Krishna today? How, so many things. How many rounds will I chant today? How attentive will I be when I chant those rounds today? We're making some relative degrees of proper free will choices. But once we're absorbed in the spontaneous stage, then it's not even, you know, Krishna's drawing our, ecstatically, he's drawing our affection for him and our love for him in a very spontaneous dynamic. And it's just ever increasing. So, sadhana means to go to that primordial choice and practice towards the light. Tamasi ma jyotirgama. And recognizing Krishna is behind both. He's the shelter of all living entities, those in illusion and those in devotion. Yeah. This is a distinction. This is, as Prabhupada is writing, this is his speciality.
So how do we reconcile
that? We reconcile it in this way, and it doesn't... try to keep it simple. We have free will, he has free will. He has unlimited free will, we have limited free will. Because we have limited free will, we can misuse it. He has unlimited free will, he doesn't misuse it. And that's the distinction. So qualitatively, there's this oneness. We have free will. But we're tiny. It's our tininess that makes that difference. Quantitative difference. So therefore, he cannot be covered and we can be covered. Something more?
Maya with his ordinance. So we say Maya doesn't exist. But I've heard they say, as Prashankar said, Maya neither doesn't exist nor exists. That's what they call us at the third stake or false.
Oh, that's an interesting word, juggling.
That's what we have been discussing this point in this video.
It neither exists nor not exists. It's in another condition.
That's what they mean by they are false. And that's what Shankaracharya
says, it's inexplicable. Okay, Nirvachanya, okay. Okay. Still, how did that which does not exist nor exists cover Brahman? Ask that question next time you meet somebody. You have some guy at work that's like this? Okay. A lot of them. They're softies. They're not like... there was one professor at Columbia University. Forget his name. He was staunch. He would bring some students to the temple. Say, this is what the way Vaishnavas do it. Then he'd pull them to the side and say, this is the way it really is. Interesting man. Yes.
Yeah. So you said we have to make a primordial choice between external potency and internal.
Yeah, service to Krishna and separate from Krishna.
So, but even if we make a choice towards internal potency, because we have to do our prescribed duties,
We still have to deal with the external world.
It becomes spiritualized. The whole thing, that being under the internal potency, means Krishna takes charge of your life directly, including everything, including your sadhana and your, you know, dealing with stuff. All of it. Relatives, insurance, you know, IRS, the whole thing. Krishna gives that spiritual potency to address the thing. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So I'll leave that with you and you just take care of it. Thanks.
Can I have your handset and phone number?
Should I keep it?
You keep it. Okay.
Yeah.